Welcome and welcome back to our podcast. Me and my dad, Gerhard, are back with another episode with a very interesting guest. And as you can already tell, this episode is going to be in English because we have an international guest with us here today. This episode is also today going to be the 18th one. So we're already having a lot of episodes since our start at the end of November, which is very exciting. And for our guest today, he is Ledon Brooks, and he is a senior global advisor and consultant. And he has been a vice president in multiple branches in a company where he has worked for over 30 years. Welcome, Ledon. I'm very excited for our conversation. And before we start, I would just ask you to introduce yourself so that the listeners get to know you a little bit better and we can start with the dialogue.
Okay, thank you for that introduction, and I'm certainly excited to be here with both of you. And you know, it was great to listen to some of the other podcasts. It's a very interesting topic, so happy to be here. And as you mentioned, I have been lucky to have a long career in Schneider Electric, working mostly in Asia Pacific, driving transformation, scaling organizations. I was able to, you know, spend time in Hong Kong, Malaysia, Vietnam, Thailand, Australia, Philippines.
Oh, wow.
So really feel lucky to have such a broad experience. And it's been really great for me. So yeah, very happy to talk about the topic you mentioned today.
Okay, great. I'm going to start with the first question that I ask everyone that comes on here, and that would be what your overall view and experience with different generations is, not only today, but also when you were younger, and what you would say is something that you have experienced the most and you think is typical for the different generations.
Okay. So if I go back to, you know, when I was very young, just starting out, I was lucky to have leadership roles at a very young age, around 23, I guess 24, when I first had a team of around 60 people. Oh. And, you know, obviously a lot of them were long experience, much older than I was. So I think, you know, I was on the opposite end at that perspective, or at that time, you know, from the perspective of, you know, trying to show your value, trying to bring value, and also myself having maybe some doubt because of, you know, obviously the experience and the knowledge of everyone else. And then, you know, as I've continued my career, obviously I've gotten a lot older. I had 30 years of various leadership type roles. So, you know, I evolved from being the young generation to really being the older generation, and working with a lot of Gen Y and Gen Z. And I think, you know, because I was, especially my last role, working in Philippines, building and scaling an organization. And as part of that, obviously recruiting a lot of new people, and a lot of them were quite young. So it was a great chance to obviously work with a lot of, obviously, Gen Y, but also Gen Z. And I guess, you know, what the one thing I've learned is we all face, you know, our own challenges. I think every generation, when they're young, they are different, right? They're facing something that maybe previous generations haven't. The environment is different. Probably the biggest change has been maybe the speed. You know, if you think about, you know, it takes 20 years before everyone has a TV. I think a computer was around 10 years, smartphone around 5 years, but really in the Gen AI days, it's happening in months. Like, for example, ChatGPT reached 100 million users in only 2 months, right? So the speed is much faster. So it's obviously something, it's really hard for anyone to know what the future is going to look like. So I think that's a special challenge for Gen Z as well.
Yeah, of course. It's for all the generations, I think, very difficult at the moment because we are living also in a crazy world. Everybody knows the actual situation. Of course, we were looking also a little bit in your CV, and what we have seen also lead on was that you had also a military career. Is this something which has helped you also in your leadership roles? Is it fair to ask this question?
Yes, absolutely. So I was blessed to go to the Air Force Academy, is where I studied. And as part of that training, there's a lot of focus on leadership. And even, if you think about your summer break and university, ours was not a break, right? We were spending time learning about different topics, but a lot of it focused on leadership. And even within the structure itself at the Air Force Academy, you have leadership opportunities from your second year where you will be leading, for example, the younger, the fresh arrivals, even during their basic training and things like that. So from that perspective, it was really good. And then the other thing that happens is, being an officer in the Air Force, you can get leadership opportunities again at a very young age. And that was the first role that I mentioned where I was leading a financial services team, and I was say 23, 24 years old. And I know some of the individuals had 40 years of experience, right? So really a big gap. And I remember even being scared to stand up in front of the group and talk, right? Nervous and so it was really lucky that I had that experience very young, because then that was a learning and an experience that I could then rely on and feel more confident as I continued my journey and had other leadership opportunities.
Do you think that leadership has changed a lot throughout the years when you first started and now compared to where we are now?
I don't think the fundamentals of leadership have changed. I think what's happened is, as we've learned, then hopefully we're becoming better leaders. Because if you go back 20, 30 years ago, of course, there was great authors and thought leaders sharing what good leadership talks about. Even if you look back through history, you have examples of great leaders, of course. But it was still quite common and even acceptable when you had the more authoritarian style, giving direction, not really encouraging and unleashing potential, coaching, things like that. And somehow that could be accepted. And it was something that maybe you felt lucky if you had a great leader as a boss, but you would somehow accept if you didn't. And I think over time, that one is leaders have become better, but also employees are a lot more demanding and won't accept the old style of leadership anymore. And as that's also evolved, people start thinking about more holistic leadership, right? It's not about I give people direction, they work crazy hours, and then I pay them well and everything's okay. No, I have to be reflecting on their entire well-being, their health, their mental health, their balance. Are they doing a role where they feel inspired? Is it aligned with their career purpose, their life purpose? Do they have meaning? Are they having impact? So I think, as those expectations have changed, then of course leadership has to change. And so I think that's the big evolution in leadership.
I think we both were going through the CCMC program from ITT World. I think I was in cohort 7, and I think you were in another cohort. But would you say that also in your coaching, in your role, it is something where employees or people in general, also leaders, have to look for the purpose, maybe also the life purpose, that they know exactly what they really want?
Absolutely. And if I reflect on my own journey, as I mentioned, I had leadership roles at a very young age where I didn't bring any expertise. In some cases, I knew very little about, what the team was doing. I was just installed as a leader in the Air Force, but also in my early days in Schneider. And you therefore had to rely on others. And I remember thinking, like, I was insecure, like, I'm not really bringing the value I should. I need to learn fast, learn, learn, learn. Of course, you want to learn. But what I was able to see was that actually, no, that's not the most important thing. Leadership is the most important thing. And by relying on others, you're also unleashing them and you're, helping them bring value and bringing them special energy. I saw not always great performers, right? When you go into a role, often you kind of know who are those strong people, the ones that they say someday can be your replacement. But in some cases, it's those that maybe weren't seen as good performers, maybe even in some case, a little bit troublemaker. But it was really because they were just being constrained. And when you unleash them, you see an energy that they've never had in their career. So that kind of made me realize the importance of giving empowerment, for example, and a coaching style, although I really wasn't a coach because I didn't know how to coach, but maybe more of a mentor. But once I joined the CCMC, I really thought it was life-changing. Because for the first time I could know the science of coaching and also the other types of coaching, which I wouldn't have even been able to name, right? Of course I heard of life coach and things like that, but I wasn't really clear what was life coaching, career coaching, breakthrough coaching, situational coaching, performance coaching. And through that program, we got to learn them all. And when I started that, it was actually my own development. I just heard of the program. I think maybe Dr. Peter Chi reached out and I thought, oh, this is good for me. So I just signed up, right? But once I saw what it was, I realized, no, this is perfect for our organization. We were on a journey from, a very basic customer experience, or not customers, maybe customer support organization, again, doing the basic task, to becoming a global capability center, bringing very high value tasks. And as part of that, we had to obviously develop the team, but also retain the team and drive engagement. And that, to your point, driving engagement is really listening to the team, understanding what they want. Coaching brought a lot to that. But what was really powerful is when we went to the career coaching, the life purpose coaching, because then you can have each team member understand where it is they want to go, and then you can help them on that journey. And that's been the big breakthrough in that organization, especially in the attrition, because when we started, attrition was greater than 30%, which is actually normal in the Philippines. It's not high for the type of work we do, but it was high for us because of the complexity of Schneider Electric. And we had brought that down to around 11% by, really working to engage. But coaching helped us take it down to 5.9% because not only were the people happy, but they were fulfilled. So you no longer had to look outside for that great opportunity because within Schneider where you're going. And by the way, some of the 5.9% that left, they went to great roles. And I'm not sad about that because coaching helped them really decide where they wanted to be. And by the way, you will not find another Philippine organization that has 5.9% attrition. It's really unheard of. When I share that with a colleague in the Philippines, they always think I'm referring to a monthly attrition, not an annual attrition.
I think I know that, and this is what I mentioned also at the beginning when we did the intro for this session, that I have seen, I think it was your Capstone 1 or Capstone 2 project, that you were starting a coaching in the organization as part of your work, which means you not only a leader, but you are also a leader and a coach at that time. And I think this was exactly where you were established, and also your framework, which you need then also for capstone projects to pass and become a CCMC. Would you say that, especially in this very, yeah, I think fast-pacing times right now, this could be for companies a really a game changer in holding their team members, establishing coaching in the organizations?
Okay, so maybe can start by reflecting on, what was our coaching culture?
Of
As
course.
I mentioned, it started with me, and then when I really saw the potential and the relevance to what we were trying to drive, we invited or I invited some of my senior leaders to join, and that was the foundation. We actually started by teaching what we were learning to the rest of the organization through what we called Kibanan sessions. And those normally might have 60, 70 people joining, but when we were on the coaching topic, you would have about 80 in the room and another 80 online. So they're very popular. And then as we had opportunity, we sent more people to the Chief Master Coach program, who also had a chance to contribute to our coaching journey and our program, basically. And eventually, we had Dr. Peter Chi come and do a Coaching for Breakthrough Success program with 120 leaders. We created our own Train the Trainer. So I was one of the Coaching for Breakthrough Success certified trainers. And eventually, we wound up on our seven pillars of coaching. And, I won't go through them all, but, it included like one is really communicating the value of coaching. The progress we're making. Every leader is a coach. Every employee receives coaching. And that was, one, to set expectations for leaders that, every one of them will learn to coach. They should be using coach. They'll be measured on not only how much they coach, but their coaching maturity and how their coachees feel they're doing. But then the commitment that every employee will have coaching, and I would do regular coffee session, town hall. And that was my commitment. Every one of them individually, you will receive coaching, performance coaching, career coaching, life coaching. And, from a career perspective, because in a coffee session, a lot of times that's where the discussion goes is career. And we evolved from where people were frustrated that, I'm doing A, I'd like to do B, I'm told to go online for, e-learning or something, to where that, my promise was every one of you will have career coaching and you will know. What you really want to be in the future. You'll know the next step and you'll know the development to get there. And the reason I wanted to share that is to come back to your question of, how relevant is it today? I think it's more relevant than either. Because if you think about, an employee who's in a good organization, meaning, they're taken care of, they're well trained, they know what they need to do. But they can still fear change. You switch that to a coaching culture where, of course, they're trained and they know what to do, but they've also had, for example, career coaching and they know their next step. So when they look at something like AI is going to dramatically change my job or even remove the task I do today, they can look at that without fear because they can see that in the future, they're still going to be bringing value in a new space. And I think that's where coaching is more important than ever in terms of, creating resiliency.
Okay.
I wanted to go a little bit more into the topic of how you discovered coaching for yourself, because I saw on your LinkedIn profile that you worked at a company for over 30 years, which is quite impressive. And yeah, I wanted to ask you, how did you discover coaching, not only for yourself, but also to bring it to other people? And also, how did you stay at the company for so long? Because nowadays it's more like people switch jobs because they find better opportunities. But for you, there must have been something that really made you stay, or like they tried to make you comfortable there and implemented changes. And I wanted to ask you, what was that for you?
Okay. So maybe I'll start with the coaching journey. Like I mentioned before, it was really, the foundations were in. One is having the opportunities to lead, the opportunity to see people reach their best potential when they were unleashed. And then it was a desire for me to learn to be a coach. So, if you go back through my many organizations, as a leadership team, we would always focus on leadership. We used to join, John Maxwell events, or we'd choose a certain book around leadership, and we'd all read it, and then we'd be teaching that to the other levels of the organization as a way to make sure we really embraced it. And so that natural curiosity made me just want to be a better leader. And even people would say, I was one of their great leaders, I was a great coach, but I wasn't, because I didn't know how to coach. I thought coaching was basically mentoring, giving advice, right? But once I, had that original desire to join the Chief Master Coach program, was because I want to understand the science of this. Because maybe people say I do it well. I didn't really realize what I was missing, but if someone asked me to guide them, okay, how to be a good coach, I didn't know what to say. So I really wanted to understand kind of the science of coaching, the structure of coaching. And then again, it was that light bulb when I saw what it was and realized what it could mean for our organization. And then taking that journey, I was very careful to choose those first leaders to be people that I knew would take it serious and would want to drive it across the organization. And I relied on them a lot. They challenged me a lot. I learned a lot from them. We would share. We were all, especially early on in those Tipanon sessions where we were teaching coaching skills, we were nervous, right? We're going to be coaching in front of 100 and something people, and I hope we get it right. What if the person, doesn't, is not a good coachee, or where you get stuck? So it needed some encouraging, and also, obviously learning from each other. And as we had more people go through the program, the Chief Master Coach, we eventually created levels. So we had a number of Chief Master Coach, a number of coaching and mentoring professionals, and then again, originally 120 people going through coaching for breakthrough success. But over time, we trained, well, almost 300 people, but a lot of those were in other organizations because we were sharing our skills. But the Coaching for Breakthrough Success classes were just nonstop, and more people signing up than we could accommodate. In terms of staying at Schneider, I don't want to say this, but it was a lot of luck, because I myself have never had like a proper career discussion with a boss. I've never had a coaching session. I wouldn't have known my life purpose, career purpose, until I went through the Chief Master Coach program. But what I did have was, was very fortunate that as I went to different organizations, there was opportunity to transform, and it became something that I could do quite well. And then that success in one opportunity would lead to the next. The right person at the right time would come and see, what they liked, and say, "Hey, can you now go somewhere else and do the same thing?" But that's a story I actually tell to the team before, that I was lucky, right? Because without the right person coming at the right time who was aware of an opportunity, who knows how my career could have progressed. But with career coaching, they have an opportunity to really be driving that. They don't have to depend on luck, right? They can know where they're going, and they can be working towards that, regardless of whether they happen to be noticed by the right person.
I only want to add one thing, and this is absolutely also in, yeah, more or less in the manner what you said also lead on, is I was never thinking that coaching is something for me before I started CCMC. I was saying this also in Nick Johnson's podcast. If you have asked me 5 years ago about coaching, I would say, yeah, it's bullshit. It's my open and honest words about that, and I see you smiling because you know the power of real professional coaching. And to all the listeners, it is really something. If you start working on your life purpose, for example, and go then also in the path about career coaching, and you establish also a career development plan, what is the progress of the CCMC part, also the program of this ITT World Organization? It is really something where you can have really a proper career plan in place. And this is what I did also some years ago. I did this coaching with Dr. Peter G in October 2023. And in this plan, I really put one thing in that. And this is my big dream to start at the Ironman World Championship in 2027 when I get 50. And this was more or less more than 2 years ago. But this is exactly what you said, Lidon. If you start planning your career, it is not something what you have to achieve in 3 months. It is also something what you can plan for the next 3 or 5 years. And this is really fantastic, right?
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Rebecca.
Yeah, I have another question
Of
in
course.
because of your where you are now and your way to where you are now, I wanted to ask if there's something you can give as advice to the younger generations in terms of discipline and following through with your goals and also reaching your potential. Is there anything that you can offer as advice or something that you could have needed when you were younger?
I think one would be to know your life purpose. And as I mentioned, throughout, we say I were sharing that I worked 30 years in Schneider Electric, and it was 27 years into that when I discovered coaching and was able to define my life purpose. But somehow, I migrated to things I liked, and again, was lucky that I was given opportunities where I could excel. But I think taking time at a young age to define your life purpose, so it's a very simple, if you have an opportunity to have a coach, great. If not, you can probably go online and be coached through AI or just a series of questions. But it's basically defining, what is it that you're very good at? What is it that you really love to do? Or, the kind of thing you can get lost doing and just time flies when you're doing it. And then what's the impact you want to have? And where those come together, that's the sweet spot where, it's where you want to be. That's where you're going to be performing your best. That's where you're going to be happy. You're not going to be stressed. And also you're going to be having the impact that you want. For some people it may be money, so for some people it may be time with their family, for some people it may be community, some others it may be in the environment, who knows? But you can be really focused on the impact that you want to have. And you may discover that and you're doing something completely different. But if you're at a young age, you can start to migrate towards that new space, right? So you can really wind up where you want to be. And so that would be the biggest advice I would have for anyone is define your life purpose, and then to build a holistic set of goals. I think you mentioned Nick Johnson before. He calls it the wheel of life. It's about your career, it's about finance, it's about your health, it's about your family, it's about your relationship with your spouse. It's about your community, and there's many different versions of that. But basically, it's just to have a holistic plan so that you're not just focused on one thing, because otherwise you'll really be focused on maybe just your current job or money or something. But this gives you a chance to really look holistically at your life and to set goals and see where you want to be and what it is you want to achieve, and then measure the things that you're doing to get there. So what are those habits, daily habits, things like that you want to be practicing to get, where you want to be. And if I take my own example, I was very lucky to have 30 years in one company. But it's the same thinking that actually encouraged me to leave, right? I had a chance to sign up for a voluntary separation at a time where I could see where the organization was going, you know, how they wanted to evolve, and felt like, okay, this is not where, you know, I'm having the impact I want, but, you know, here are the things I would like to do. And again, if I were looking just at money and job, then I would say, no, I'm going to stay, and, you know, I've got 2 more years, I'm going to be here 2 more years. But, you know, I had the courage to step up because I was really looking holistically.
Okay. Do you also think that because we like to talk about leadership and generational dialogue and everything, but also about communication. And I think you've mentioned it before that it's not the only thing that matters. I don't know exactly what the context was, but I wanted to go a bit deeper into this topic. How you perceive communication today, also in terms of, all the social media and that the younger generations are growing up, with the internet. And do you also feel like maybe communication is getting a bit lost there because everything is digital and it's not really, person to person communication anymore?
It's possible, and I think, you know, depends on individuals and how they manage it. Like, even if you just step back away from work, you have a lot of quite famous people that, you know, kind of live on social media will share how, for example, they don't have Instagram because, you know, it creates this image of these perfect lives all around you and can make you somehow disappointed in your own. So I think that's a bit of a risk. If I think in a work context, you know, I was in the when I was first in the Philippines, because of the economic zone we were working in, we had to be 100% in the office. So everyone working had to be in the office, right? And then COVID came. And just like that, we went 100% working from home. And, you know, some people hear that, oh, that's great. But when that happened, like, you really lost something, right? And again, depending on each individual and how they, you know, what their family situation or their relationship situation or where they were relative to their friends and things like that. You know, it could be a lonely space. And so during that time, we were really focused on well-being, that, you know, everyone is taking care of each other. Because if I'm in the office next to someone, it's easy to share something that's maybe bothering me or, you know, that I want help with. But, you know, when you actually have to reach out to communicate to someone, there's a higher threshold to say, oh, this isn't big enough to, you know, I don't want to disturb anyone. So that was a concern. So when we came back to the office, like a lot of organizations, we did hybrid. But I think we did it differently because for a lot of organizations, hybrid is just, it's 3 days at home, it's 2 days in the office. It's 2 days at home, it's 2 days in the office. But we looked at it differently to say, you know, why do you stay home and why do you come to the office, right? You stay home because you want to focus. You want to have more time with your family because you avoid traveling to the office, which in Philippines can be a long time, right? So plan that way, right? So if I was working from home, I would have back-to-back-to-back meetings with potentially people that are not located where I am. You come to the office to connect, which means you're on the floor as a leader, you plan your one-on-ones, you plan your coaching session, you plan your team events, you plan your engagement. And then we adapted our office to match that by not even having offices for leaders. So myself, I didn't have an office. I would sit on the floor. And that meant you were really approachable, connecting. And that was made possible again because we're hybrid, because obviously as a leader, there's days you need to focus. Well, those days I would stay home. When I go to the office, I'm really there to connect and, you know, be with the team. So I think that can offset some of the challenges with communication. But I think, you know, when an organization is fully remote, something they really need to think about is, you know, is this affecting the teamwork? Is this affecting the communication? And then again, just the dangers of social media that, you know, people that work, you know, grow up tied to seeing, you know, everyone sharing the great things through filters and everything else, right? You can start to feel like, I'm not pretty, I'm not successful, I don't have all these great things. And I think that's not healthy.
Yeah, that's a good summarization of how social media looks these days. And thank you for, your view on this. And I just have to say, it's really interesting what you said about that you, as a leader yourself, you didn't even have an office, but you were sitting on the floor, and so that you were, it was possible to approach you and talk to you. And I think this is a really unique perspective on all of this, and I haven't heard of this yet before, that this concept has been done before. So thank you for that. It's really interesting. And Dad, do you want to ask a question, say something?
I have only one last question, if this is also okay, because I heard that you have this framework with these seven pillars, I think, established in Schneider Electric. And we in Germany, of course, know also Schneider Electric because it's a multinational company, which is, I think, has facilities all over the world. Could you explain maybe in some words what these seven pillars are that the listeners can take something with them from our session today?
Okay, so just to maybe clarify, so Schneider is a big company, and I would say one of the it's actually often ranked number one, the most sustainable company in the world, and a big part of that is how they take care of their people. But in terms of coaching culture, there's not really a coaching culture across Schneider Electric. What we created was very specific to my team, and then it spread out to some other teams that were closely connected to us and wanted to take part in that journey. So the seven pillars was something we created through the CCMC capstone projects, right? So again, we early on we created something, we added to it, we added to it, and over time it became our seven pillars. And of course, in Schneider, as we evolved, and I'm sure it's still happening now that I'm gone, but we started to one through our train the trainer program for the Coaching for Breakthrough Success. We're training people outside our organization. We were doing career coaching for other organizations. We would teach coaching even to like the global teams. So I think over time it'll continue to spread, but it's not a Schneider Electric initiative. So the seven pillars. So one was to make it visible. So I was regular town halls. When I'd do a town hall, I would do like 19 sessions because we'd tailor them by team, and I'd cover all the time zones, and so it'd really be like 2 weeks of lots of sessions happening at all hours. I did kind of nonstop coffee sessions, things like that. We had an internal social media. So we would constantly be sharing, the coaching journey, what we're learning, the success stories. There were some great stories, right? In one case, where a leader didn't understand coaching, didn't believe in coaching, learned coaching, applied it to someone that was a poor performer on a performance improvement plan. As far as he's concerned, just a matter of time before they're out. But through coaching, completely transformed them, and they became the top performers. So they were multiple times at the top performers banquet because, really, they found out what worked for them, right? Individuals. So we would communicate regularly those kind of stories. Two is, like I mentioned, every leader is a coach, every employee is receiving coaching, and that was a strong commitment, expectation for the leader, commitment for the employees. Next is we had a program to make sure we could continue to build the skills and give leaders an opportunity to practice so they could build confidence. So that's where we had thought leaders, Dr. Peter, we had Nick Johnson, we had a lady coach Pia from the Philippines. We found many ways to continue to grow the skills. Not even only just leaders, right? But some of the other contributors. If you think, for example, the quality team, whose job is to evaluate interactions, to give feedback, we would teach them coaching because it made them more successful as they were working with the employees. Of course, we applied coaching to our talents as part of the talent review process. We applied coaching to our biggest issues, which was a way to show the power of coaching, because you mentioned before something about, you thought coaching was BS. And honestly, a lot of people feel that way. And even my boss didn't understand coaching, initially was like saw it as like a happy thing to do. Oh, you do that for people to be happy for your engagement, not really understanding how it affects performance. Even in, our own HR wasn't really involved in our program because, for them they thought it was maybe spending too much money, on a program, right? So we really wanted to show the power of coaching and how it was impacting everything, right? Not just engagement, attrition, but directly impacting performance. We had one team that adapted coaching. It obviously started at a very low level, but they were around 10 in their net satisfaction score. They were sustaining 70, even 80 the last few months I was there. I'm sure they're still doing well. Overall, we increased that by 30 points, which is really significant because that's a number that's hard to move. The next is we wanted to create a program around it. So we follow four disciplines of execution, which is a way to make sure that you focus on your biggest transformational things, because every day you can get lost in your whirlwind of daily activity. So the things that are really important that are driving your future, you want a way to keep them in focus. So you have wildly important goals, you have the leading indicators and actions that you want to drive, you have a scorecard, and then you have a regular cadence to make it happen. So we put our coaching program as part of that, right? It's a documented program that's part of our breakthrough initiative and also part of our ISO system. And the last one is very powerful. We coach the world. And initially, this was coaching outside our team, sharing the capability with other teams in Philippines, but eventually, other parts of the world. But it eventually evolved to coaching students. And this was super powerful. It started with some a school called Sisters of Mary, which is a little bit targeted to maybe disadvantaged students. But when we had the chance to coach them, you could see a light come on, an excitement. We would teach things like limiting beliefs, and then later they would give their testimonials, and you just think, oh, I wish someone had talked to me when I was that age. Eventually, we were doing it also with university students. And the beauty of that was you were really unleashing the potential of the students, but it showed our employees how powerful coaching could be. And they were so excited to be a part of it. Every time we do one of those events, we'd have to turn people away because so many people wanted to go and be a part of that coaching experience.
Wow,
So
that's
those are our seven
fantastic.
pillars.
Fantastic. Yeah, I have no more questions to add because I think you did a fantastic journey in your career, and I think you make still you try to make a difference to the world, and you're starting also a new role, and I think this was also your decision now not to be longer in the corporate world. I think you really want to go now and make a difference really to yeah people, and that's fantastic.
Maybe if I can just share one thing.
Of course.
If I come back to, Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z, I would compare that to my own experience learning the different cultures, right? Again, because I worked in many different countries that have wildly different cultures. And of course, as you do that, you get training or advice about, these are the things you do, these are the things you don't do. People can tend to be like this or like that. And it's the same, right? We all have ideas of, how Gen X is, Gen Y, Gen Z, because, they're growing up with, the computers and AI and all the things, social media, all the things, right? But in both cases, I don't think we should create that as hard and fast. This is definitely how people are, right? And it's like you asked before about communication. That's where two-way communication becomes very important, because you'll never know when you're going into a new culture. No one's going to be able to tell you every little thing that you need to know, every little thing that you can think is natural that might be insulting. So you have to really stay aware, right? So the culture training becomes a lens that you look through. But by really connecting and observing, you can see how certain things you do are well received and other things you do might not be so impacting, right? Or even might be insulting, right? So I would take the same approach to, Gen XYZ by saying that we have a lens to look through, which is a good starting point, but that treating everyone as individuals, understanding their purpose, understanding what they want. And that's where coaching really comes in because it's a personal conversation, right? It's a very personal thing that you're not telling someone based on, okay, you're Gen Z and this is how you should be doing things because this is how you are. No, you're asking great questions to help them explore, what's important for them, what's motivating for them, what they want to do, what's the impact they want to have, what's the most important things.
I think I end with another guest we had, which was Jose Romero. I think you know him also. And he
Yes.
said, be curious. I think this is really something which is a really good end point to that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, amazing.
Good.
So I think the summary for this episode has been done. Thank you for your last words and what you said again. I can't really add anything to that because you said everything important. And so I just want to thank you for joining us in this episode. And thank you for your insights and thank you for telling your story and how you got to coaching and also for explaining the seven pillars. I wrote them down and I think it's really interesting, and also that you coach students, which I also think is really important, for the younger generation, so they also get introduced to this topic. So yeah, thank you for that. And to the listeners, as always, thank you for supporting us, giving us feedback, listening to our podcast. And that's it for today's episode. If you have any remarks or anything you want to talk to us about, always text us. We're going to look at your messages. And yeah, that's it for this episode. And until the next one, bye.
Ciao.
Thanks a lot. This was a lot of fun.